This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello, and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks, live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, CEO and founder of Planex, the market-leading fintech focused on real-time liquidity, treasury and risk. Now, our topic today, very exciting topic, it's beyond T plus one, the future of real-time liquidity. Welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience throughout this podcast can ask a question. If you put it in the comments section, you see on the right-hand side of the screen that I can take the questions as we go, or if we get too many, I can batch them up and we can ask them at the end. We've got 30 minutes today. If you do ask a question, please let us know who you are and if you possibly can, your role, so we have some context. Now, I'm delighted today to be joined by our guest speaker, Gary Wright. Gary, would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, it'd be a big pleasure, Neville. Hello, everyone. Well, I'm Gary Wright, joined the city in 1969, and thanks very much to Planaxis for putting up a picture of me on the advert about 35 years ago. You can well see that I'm now a bit of a hairy mammoth, and but unlike the mammoth, I'm not extinct, and I've been working in the city, mainly on the sales side, worked on lots and lots of things over the time, not least Crest. Big Bang, etc. Now I'm a commentator on the market, and I with Azitsa Europe, I'm a director that looks at change, and we measure change by how it affects issuers and how it impacts investors to the good, not to the detriment, and that's our measurement. That's how we measure change within the markets. So T plus one is very high on our focus at the moment.
Brilliant, Gary. Thanks very much for that. Now, Gary, I usually start off these sessions by asking about football, and I know you've got a very long-term interest in football. So let me ask you, who's your team and why?
Well, I'm a Tottenham Hotspur supporter, as is the whole of my family, and going way back to 1872 when my great-granddad supported Tottenham. So it's in my DNA, and I couldn't possibly look at any other team.
Brilliant. So you don't want me to bring up like the 2019 Champions League final or anything like that?
I really do not wish that. I don't want to talk about penalties that weren't penalties, VAR, which doesn't work. I don't want to talk about anything like that.
So if we could, just for you, Gary, I wore my special top.
I had noticed it was Liverpool all over the place. Yes, I can see that. And thank you for reminding me. I think
no problem.
Once in the last 150 years. So. Thank you.
Right. So this topic is a big topic. We're going to try and get as much through as we possibly can next half an hour. For those of you who are interested, in the comments section, we're just going to post an article that Gary kindly contributed to. It's all about T plus one. So if you had a read through of that after the event, that'll be very insightful. Also, if there's anything in this topic that we talked through today that you'd like us to talk more on, just email Nick Appleby and we'll post his email from Planex into the comments as well. Right, onto the topic today. Let's get into the meat. So as we all know, right, market dynamics they continue to transform due to many things, but also due to the shift to T plus one or even to T plus zero, settlement cycles, instant payments, tokenized assets, DLT, and so on. But one thing's clear, right? I think we all agree that the window for decision making is shortening. But let's take a step back. And Gary, could you just recap on what we mean by settlement cycle and why they exist?
Well, settlement cycles is the time it takes for a transaction to be executed and then settled. And it varies around the world, has done for years. So we're going way back in when I started in the city, it was account settlement. So every 2 weeks you would settle. And that's gradually as technology has been introduced, that's come down to the current T plus two, which has been up until this year, the standard settlement internationally. Proverbial hit the fan this year when the US North American markets moved to T plus one, And so settling one day after the transaction. And that really has caused, I'd like to say something less than mayhem, but it has been mayhem. It's called caused a global reaction to try and continue dealing and transacting in the US as efficiently as possible. We'll talk a bit later about all the impediments for that. But but the cycle of T plus one in the equity market is what we're talking about today. There is variances. Mutual funds, for instance, settle on a T3, T4 sometimes as far as T5. So redemption is a bit. So we got these sort of, we don't have a single market. So we don't have a level playing. Yeah. We have different products that definitely operate at different settlement timeframes, and now we have different major markets that operate at different settlement timeframes.
Got it. Understand. That's really, really helpful backdrop. So, you know, one of the main drivers for moving to T plus one, and you know, why did North America move to the shorter cycle at such an aggressive timeframe as well? What was the main drivers for that, Gary?
Well, the main driver is came from a failure of the regulatory side in New York with GameStop, where day traders couldn't unwind their transactions. That the whole settlement thing came to a halt, and so getting out of a stock was almost impossible. That led to the SEC in the guise of Gary Gensler, the chairman of the SEC, to set about, and this would be 2, 3, 4 years ago now, set about a program to move the US market towards T plus one as a resolution to that particular problem. I have to say that there's not a little bit of ego involved with this as well, international ego and personal ego involved. You know, who can be the fastest, I think, comes into it. And but the main sort of benefit that comes out of this is very much for investment banks, those that are close to the clearing of transactions, where they will have, as a result of T plus one, have to put up less collateral, would have to put up less margin. All that, the idea is, flows back into the market, so that would increase liquidity. And when I asked Gary Gensler what is the benefit for investors, he said, well, they get their money quicker when they sell. But he couldn't really answer my follow-up question. Well, as a buyer, don't you have to pay faster as well? And I didn't really get an answer on that. over on the international stage, that propagated the UK to set up the UK task force. That was about 18 months ago, and this was about 6 months into a research project that Zitzi Europe was commissioned by the Swift Institute to monitor the impacts on global markets of the North American market moving to T plus one. I say North American because once the US moved to T plus one, the Canadians had to do it as well. The result of that research was published by Swift and by Zitzi, and it was freely passed around about a May ago. And it was the UK setting up the task force that came in the middle of that. So we've been working with the task force since with the first report that Charlie Geffen published earlier on this year in February, which set up the technical task force, which has been operating actually since January, but officially since February, and we've been working on a report that would detail recommendations for the market to do. That's market players on the buy side and the sell side to do before the drop dead date on T plus one for the UK is 2027. Now that the actual date is not set for that yet. That will come probably later. Certainly after the report, the second report is published by the end of this year.
And when the US moved to or North America moved to T plus one, was there a consultation phase? Did banks push back and say this can't possibly be done? It's impossible. Can't do this. What was that dialogue like?
There was a consultation in the US with the various commissioners from different parts of the industry, different parts of the of America. Were all looked at through their membership, looked at the market, and there was a public vote, which was is it streamed in on, you know, anyone could look at it, and it was passed 3-2 with Gary Gensler being the deciding vote to move it to T+1. At least two of the commissioners in their replies said that they were concerned about the impacts of on the international market. Now, there's about 40% of the daily investing transactions come into the US from outside of the US. So it seems a huge faux pas that the US commissioners did not take heed of the international markets. And then, rather than unilaterally making a decision, do it in collaboration with the other major markets around the world. They didn't decide to do that. They basically threw their threw the rock into the pond, and we're now working with the ripples. And apart from the UK move, the EU equally are now looking at what they have to do to align with the US. The UK looked the same in 2027. The EU have far greater political problems to do that. There's no capital markets union yet in the EU, so you've got 27 separate jurisdictions and many more CSDs that have to be turkeys and vote for Christmas, so we won't hold our breath on that. What will happen with the UK move to align with the US will be I think will emerge sometime during next year, once the market consultations have finished. The way the UK is doing it, through a heavy consultative process with the market, internationally as well. ISITSI set up at the Japanese market, that we've been keeping informed of that, and we have done this with other markets dotted around the world. So we see this as the collaboration with international markets, as opposed to the US making a unilateral decision.
Was there ever an overall cost benefit analysis done for this, the move to T+1, or was it always about risk, really?
Or
ego, I guess.
that is a great question, Neville. When the US moved to T+2 about 12, 13 years ago, they did have a cost benefit analysis, which they had the Boston Consulting Group do, and which I've had sight of. I've read the report from there, and in the report it said about should they move to T+1, and the Boston Consulting Group at that stage said no, there's no cost benefit to do that for the market, so not to go to T+1. Now we're moving to T+1. There has been no cost benefit analysis in the market anywhere. So this is one of the major problems that we've got in trying to work out who pays, effectively. And the concern ISITSI has with this is that the people that will pay and are paying are investors. The US moved in May this year, and the Citibank survey that was published a few weeks ago has said globally that investors are paying higher charges now for their transactions in the US than what they were paying before. This is the sort of thing that should have come out of a cost-benefit study. It was not done. It's not been done anywhere in the world, mind. So we're kind of doing this, hoping that at the end of the day, everything works and investors get the benefit and issuers get the benefit and markets work efficiently. Whether they will or not is got to be questionable.
No, I get it. So the US has obviously moved, and I guess in space, it's been about 4 or 5 months. So, what have we learned from that, Gary? I saw some positive noises at the start, but as you suggest, that report from Citi suggested otherwise. Plus, those at APAC have seen some challenges with the funding. So what's your view on that overall?
Yeah, the what we've learned is, first of all, we've got to collaborate internationally, number one. Two, what America did very well internally in their markets is educate. They educate everybody to get everybody there at the same time. What they didn't do particularly well is invest in new technology and in systems. They tended to throw bodies at it. So their overheads have suddenly gone through the roof. In the time frame that we have towards 2027, I'm hopeful, but not confident, that especially on the buy side, firms of that small and medium-sized firms invest in the necessary technology to automate manual processes. I'm not wholly confident in that we'll do that, but that's what we've got to do. One of the benefits that we have in the UK is the design of CREST, the settlement system for the UK, which in the design phase of CREST, Ian Saville, who was the project manager and the god of CREST, if you like, he told me that it was designed for continuous settlement. Now, all those years later, 30-odd years later, that basic design within CREST still exists. The cutoff times within CREST are there because the market operates in batch. So it's done for the market. That CREST actually could operate on a 24/7 if the market could operate 24/7. So CREST is a jewel in the UK crown. It's absolutely unique in terms of the rest of the market. The question is, can the market catch up with CREST? And the genius of Saville and his team is now, I think, being exposed.
Excellent. So looking ahead, I think you said the UK announced for 2027, and I presume that Europe will transition at some stage too. So, you know, what's your view on those markets? What's needed? Is it more collaboration? Look at it and do it in stages rather than just pushing it in one go?
Yeah, collaboration, definitely. If the UK and the EU could align together with the USA that as early as possible, that would be the golden move if we could get to that point. I don't think we will. I think probably the most likely scenario is the UK will move and the EU will follow sometime after. The problem that we have is misalignment, is funding. This is where the investors are already paying, and those funds are coming through gaps, especially on ETFs and similar products, where the execution of the settlement of the transaction, the underlying transaction, is not matching redemption or not matching the contracted time of settlement. So there's at least a 24-hour funding gap. On top of that, CLS, the cooperative organization that clears all the FX transactions in the world, operates on T+2. Now, all of the capital market transactions together would amount to less than 7% of what CLS settle on or clear on a daily basis. So the huge amount of what CLS settled on T+2 is like you and me. It's your my transactions, our FX transactions, and they're not going to move. Anyone in the capital markets thinks that there's a future for CLS suddenly changing to T+1, forget it. It's not going to happen. So internationally, because of batch processing, we will always have a funding issue that we're going to have to manage. Therefore, what this means is that virtually every firm that has a client has got to have a much better treasury function than what they have today. If firms are outsourcing their treasury to their custodian, they need to make sure that their custodian is doing the best they can to get best execution on behalf of the investors. If they can, they need to bring that treasury function in-house. Now, that's a cost, of course. But the benefit is that they get control of the execution. They get control of best execution on behalf of their clients. So this is an anomaly that's emerged out of T+1, which wasn't envisaged in the US, but is now clearly understood outside of the US.
Got it. Good. Right. We have a question from Dan Thierney. He said, What happens to market makers and brokers and middlemen when shares and equities settle at T plus zero, as China does today? We're going to talk about that afterwards, but have you got an answer to that question?
Yeah, I have. If we talk about today's market as the traditional market, T plus zero is a non-event. It's not going to happen. It's not possible. We can hardly do T plus one without cost. T plus zero, it's under batch. It's illogical if you think about it. We operate in batch. We don't operate in real time. How can we operate T0, settling T0 in real time? It's not possible. So that won't happen. But what might happen, and what I think will happen, is that we're on a transitional path towards digital assets and a digital, I won't say market, yeah, but digital platforms operated by banks that will operate on a T plus zero. And through a digital platform, through a DLT platform, T plus zero, and all the problems I'm talking about with funding and what have you under the traditional market structures go away under a blockchain-based structure.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, we've seen over the last 10, 12 years of Planex, we've seen everything. It's moving more real time, but there is this big overhead of batch in there that's, you know, part of the infrastructure and legacy platforms, and that's not going to go overnight. That's going to take a long time.
The question is to educate on this, and without sounding like a politician, I was throwing a few more educates, because people really do need to think about the future, and it's not about failed settlements. This T plus one is not about how many failed settlements you got. This is about business. This is about services to your client. This is about positioning your company for the future. So investing in real-time technology, investing in services, you know, upgrading your services to your customer, reducing the risks in the market, having control of the treasury functions, which I think will become one of the key requirements of every single financial services firm, those are going to be the things which people will pay for. If you don't do it, well, like the woolly mammoth, you're going to be a dinosaur. Yeah. You're going to disappear.
Indeed. So, look, whichever way you look at T plus one, it's coming to a market near you. What do you say to banks who ask you or consult with you, and they say, "Look, it doesn't really impact me. It's kind of not my problem." What do you say to them? Because we hear that a lot. It's, you know, it's not really going to impact me. I'm okay.
Impacts everyone. It impacts even the man in the street. If you've got a pension, it impacts you. If your costs go up because of T plus one, it impacts you. It doesn't. There is not anybody in the country that it doesn't impact. There's no firm in the country that's involved in financial markets in any sense or form it does not impact. If you're running a pension fund, it impacts you. If you're running a fund for yourself, it impacts you. If you're a service supplier, you're impacted because you're looking after your clients. If you're a major investment bank, you're dealing with the market and you're dealing with the trade. It impacts everyone. There is not a bank, there's not a financial services firm where it doesn't impact.
And you know what? We've often seen there's great things that you should do, but sometimes only when the regulator tells you you have to do it, you actually do it. We've seen that a lot in our space and other areas as well. But
that's another good point, Neville. Regulations, how tough are regulators going to be on the market for adhering to T plus one or not? This will be, I think, one of the key questions which we'll be trying to answer in the coming years, whether that's through a new code that will be introduced, that people will be measured by the regulators against a new code of performance, of how you perform as an organisation for your clients. I think all this is in the melting pot. We'll know about this. I think this is going to be some of the things we'll be talking about for the next year or two.
Got it. Look, we've already seen some issues raising capital through, you know, DLT, blockchain, digital assets. What's your view on this, the impacts that that'll have on markets, linking to the comments you said previously?
Well, we've already seen The Citibank survey showed it, you know, very, very clearly. But it's also what I think we know, because every bank, every major bank in the world has got a had a blockchain or a DLT based project. All the clearing houses, the CSDs, the stock exchanges, they're all got projects. They've all got hiring people to learn and understand about the technology and what's going on. And we now see that there's a growth of digital assets into portfolios are growing almost exponentially a year. So this is not an experiment anymore. 10 years ago, we were talking about blockchain as a bit of an experiment to see what was going to happen. And people were very critical about the use of blockchain because they've heard and seen on the news around criminal activities and money laundering, all this sort of business. Now, those things are all real. They're all there. But the technology is, like all technologies when they're created, they're adaptable. They adapt and they evolve. And that's what's happening with DLT. It's gradually becoming a part of the furniture within banks and within financial organisations. And we've seen that issuers, now this is the crux, issuers are now raising capital and are putting debt instruments onto a blockchain, onto a banking blockchain. Investors are now going to that blockchain and investing in that. Now, what that means is that product now has not hit a stock exchange, it's not hit a clearinghouse, and it's not hit a CSD. We also know that SWIFT have been working very feverishly with banks for a number of years, and they now have blockchains that are interoperable on the SWIFT network. So we're getting an infrastructure being created. It's not presentable at the moment, but this is what's happening. As the jigsaw pieces start to come together, you start to realize that what we're creating is a parallel market. Well, it's not a market, it's a parallel capability of raising capital and investing through banking verticals. Yeah. Against a market which is listed on the stock exchange, the traditional markets. Now, the things that I've been talking about on the traditional markets, with the funding issues, with the, you know, the batch issues, the 24/7, you know, all the things that we've been talking about up to date, they disappear once you put things on a blockchain. So what I think will happen, we're in a transitional path. I think it will be, again, a bit like the dinosaurs, survival of the fittest. I think what will happen is that liquidity will eventually move from the traditional market into these other alternative ways of raising capital. And if the tipping point is reached where there's more liquidity off market than there is on market, then one questions the cost, whether the traditional markets can carry on at the cost that they are. And then there's decisions to be made. So the time frame for all of that, I mean, that's a vision. I mean, for some people, that I'm giving a vision of Armageddon, but I'm really excited about this. I'm a traditionist, and I've grown up in this market, but I'm really excited about this. I think this is not something that we should, run away from or stick our head in the sands and make out it's not happening. It is happening, and we need to position our businesses so that we can take advantage of it. If you don't, I fear for your business.
I agree.
You really need to have to think about all the technologies that you need to invest in.
So look, we haven't touched much on this, but you know, the eventual move to T+1, and it sometime in the future could be T+0. What's the impact it's going to have on liquidity and risk management? Because that's important to us and most of our listeners today.
Yeah, it's liquidity. What we have is you've got the asset almost in real time settlements, real time money being synonymous with the money itself. So the liquidity issues, not just domestically, but by product, by sector, by country, internationally, by currency, all become important things to manage, because the volatility could be huge. You may not have the time to wait to the end of the day and get some data to say, well, I've got a liquidity problem in this currency, or a liquidity problem in that currency, or this product, or for this client, or in this country. We need to do something about it. You won't have that luxury of time. So you have to get that data in real time. You have to be able to be either individually, personally reactive to that situation, or you need possibly AI programs or some technical support to be able to make good decisions. But the future looks to me like more about treasury and liquidity management than it does about settlement.
Couldn't agree more. Well said. We're running out of time, Gary, but final thought, what are your key 3-4 takeaways for the viewers today?
Right. First of all, educate. Learn about this.
Yeah.
Open minds. You know, what we don't want is traditionists to say, well, this won't happen or that won't happen. Think about it. It just might. If you take one, it might. So educate, learn about it. Go and find out what's going on. Secondly, on T+1, be prepared. Don't think that things are don't affect you. Don't think that this is going to, somebody else is going to pick this up. This will affect everyone in more or less, and you need to know whether it's more or less, and do the necessary. Keep an eye on the report when it's published from the task force, and attend whatever events that you need to attend to discuss with your peers and with your clients, especially your clients, things that could change and what might affect them. The third thing, have a look at your technology. At your batch processing. Really, this is going to be the biggie, because in the future, batch processing just won't do it.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Look, before we end, in the comments section, we've just put a link to a webinar hosted by Forvis Mazars, where you're going to have the opportunity to discuss the recommendations of the UK Accelerated Task Force that Gary's talked about, which I think have been accepted by the government. So if you want to attend, click onto that link. Unfortunately, Gary, we've run out of time. Fascinating topic. Thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your views. If anyone has any questions after the event, please let us know and we will get back to you with answers after the podcast. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much. Look out for our next podcast coming next month. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
Thanks, Neville. Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.